Welcome to Between Life and Money, Finding Balance with Jeffrey Panik from Balance Wealth Partners. In this space, we're keeping it real about money, unraveling the intricacies of spending and investing, and making it all about you. Dive into the journey of striking the perfect balance between enjoying the now and preparing for what's next. Money talk might seem complex, but we're here to simplify it. Join us as we, along with experienced guests, are planning for more than retirement. We are planning for life.
Welcome to the Between Life and Money podcast with your host, Jeff Panik. Jeff, good to be with you again. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, so today we're going to talk about what everybody loves to talk about in banking. Even if you don't like to talk about it and you in some cases dread it, it's important to look at it and actually understand how your money's being used.
Yeah.
And to try to, you know, try to get the most out of what you're putting away for either a rainy day or for something that, you know, you want to have available.
Banking's changed so much. It's amazing to me. You know, when I was a kid, yeah, I had checkbooks and you had to go in a bank and, you know, and the advent of the ATM has changed the relationship, I think, forever for most people.
I think, you know, with technology and the ability to have, you know, what we call a smartphone, or, you know, I think that's almost like a, you know, that's a pun on words, if you will.
Yeah.
I think it's making everyone dumber, but you know, from the aspect of banking and the ability to just do things on demand, whether it's bill pay, whether it's direct deposit, you know, whether it's taking money out, as you mentioned, it makes it extremely easy in order to do things. You know, it's really a question of, you know, kind of a, like a lot of things, you know, the devil's in the details, and it's very easy just to sit there and just have money accumulate without really an understanding of how to get the most out of it, or even how, you know, what fees are even paying on it.
Well, yeah, no, it's totally true, because you start, basically, you don't think about the bank anymore, really. And you know what else you really don't think about? And I noticed this the other day when I was driving by the cash machine at my bank. It was like three doors down from my bank was a credit union.
Yeah.
And I thought, I didn't even know credit unions existed anymore.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, really, you know, and it used to be credit unions were very, we would say niche. They were for very specific groups.
Yeah.
And what we've seen over the past few years is really the credit unions open up their services for most, you know, you could typically find some sort of what we call affinity group, or a group that allows you, or, you know, knowing someone to get into that environment. And, you know, the big question even for, you know, most people, you know, what is really even the difference between the bank and credit unions?
Exactly.
You know, and that's really one of the things that we're going to talk about, because, you know, you get a lot of confusion, you know, between the difference of between the two. You know, what's the difference between a checking, a money market, saving, CD? It's important to know, because really, I consider, you know, your checking account really is your core operating account, and it's really the foundation of your financial life.
Yeah, that's true. So what are the differences, Jeff?
Yeah, so really, you know, if I look at the difference between a credit union and a bank, the primary difference is really on structure. You know, a bank is for profit and is owned by shareholders, while a credit union is not for profit and the customers are considered members. And so that really is the biggest distinction. And really getting further, you know, sometimes people are like, what is even a credit union? Well, I can say a perfect example would be USAA. You know, that is probably the one that most individuals will recognize and understand. And, you know, USAA, they help military veterans, family members, and even spouses from the standpoint of complementary services.
Yeah.
You know, another example would be an employee type of situation with IBM Credit Union would be one. You have these large institutions, and even, you know, I use an example of Navy Federal would be another one. Mm-hmm. You have various institutions that are credit unions, and really typically the benefit is going to be it's not for profit, so they can really push more, in some cases, a better rate for, say, an auto loan or deposits there. But it's like anything else. Really, you want to understand what your specific circumstances are and utilize the institution that works best for those circumstances in your families.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I didn't even realize until you mentioned it. The Navy Federal, I know, USAA, I know, because they run ads all the time. I didn't realize they were a credit union, as a matter of fact. So while we're talking about this, I think we probably ought to tell the listeners why it's important. What are the distinctions, and why is it important that you're talking about it today?
Yeah, so you want to understand what you're going to use the institution for. I mean, are you going to be going in to do deposits? Do you need to discuss if you have a business account or having business accounts? Do you really want to have you're going to need a relationship of someone that can help you. If you get a return check from someone, a customer, or you have something you don't understand, or you even need help, from the standpoint of lending, that's where the in-person relationship becomes very important. And, really what I tell people a lot of times, you want to focus on A, convenience, because you want something that you can either go to or you have access online that makes it easy to use. The more difficult and complicated something's going to be to use, more than likely you're going to either back away from it or just not get what you should be getting out of it. The other side would be, and everybody knows this as well, are the online banks. And, an example of, for the most part, an online bank would be, I use the example of Capital One, and they do have some cafes around, but in general, we would say, it's an online bank. The benefit of the online bank is that you typically will get a higher rate on your savings, money market accounts, typically with lower fees. But like everything else, there's a trade-off and a balance. And on the end of online banking accounts, really, it comes down to really having limited contact and support. So by using them, you want to make sure that if you're going to be utilizing an institution, if you're going to need support because either you have a business and you have checks coming in and various other things, you want to make sure that you have a contact there that really can help you get what you need done there. And run, we would say, kind of run interference. And, the other side of it would be, when you're looking at a traditional bank or credit union, you want to make sure, like I mentioned, convenience. It's not a bad idea to talk to family and friends and say, who do you use? What do you like? Because, and the other side of that is a lot of times they'll be more than likely to tell you some horror stories about a bank or institution they've had bad experiences about. That's sometimes when feedback is good as well. And I also mentioned, for someone starting out, a lot of times what you can do if you're starting with a new employer, a lot of times the employers will have special relationships with one or two banks or credit unions that really allow you to get discounted services because you're an employee of the company. So that's always another thing that you could really look at. And it really, in the end, you want to center around what works best for you and understand what costs there are involved. And really, if you have a surplus, how can you get the most interest out of that?
Well, I want to underscore something too, because I couldn't tell you the last time I walked into a bank. And a lot of people will go like, I don't care if I ever walk into a bank, except that you don't know how important support is to when you until you need support. And the last time I walked into my bank was because I had some issues. And I didn't want to do the chat thing on my computer. I wanted to talk to a person. And I did get to go in and speak to a person, and we resolved the issues. And it was very satisfactory. So I just want to underscore that when people are looking at the things you were talking about, Jeff, don't write off how much support you get from the bank and whether you got a person on the other end.
I mean, I think it's important to have a personal relationship, and usually when you need the personal relationship is usually at the worst time when there's been like check fraud, or you've had an issue with something that you are having trouble with, or, you just have to go out and say, I've had an expense that has come up, or I need to get some sort of lending, or if I need help with something, if you can have someone that you can reach out to, certainly it makes the situation that much more tenable and easier to kind of get through.
Yeah, it's funny because I got the feel. We went through a period in banking where they de-emphasize personal relationships, and I think that banks and credit unions are beginning to realize, hey, this
I think
people-to-people thing might be important.
you hope that, and it's as much as they talk about artificial intelligence and the bots and all these other things, you mentioned the perfect example with a bot. The bot it's going to direct you to another probably frequently asked question section.
Every time.
That's not going to get you what you need. And so, you know, even if you have to leave a message for someone that you have as a contact there, they will hopefully get back to you. If they don't, then that's probably a sign that you maybe need to look around. But, you know, it's really, you really want to make sure, you know, that you're getting the most out of the banking relationship, especially if you look at when we'll talk about savings and money market accounts in a minute, you know, but you want to make sure if you have money sitting there, whether it's for an emergency fund or for a specific short-term goal, you know, that you're getting the most interest out of that money. And at the same time, you know, not paying a bunch of fees that kind of eat away at any sort of interest that you would have earned. And the obvious question, you know, just to keep it simple really is, you know, really what's the difference between a checking, savings, and money market account? You know, are they kind of the same? Mm-hmm. You know, well, there's some core differences, and really, you know, I consider a checking account, or the way I view a checking account, is it's your core operating account. You know, it should be the account where your income flows in, hopefully via direct deposit from your employer and other income you have, and your expenses go out of that account as well. So it's a good account where you can view what's coming in, what's coming out, and you know, can balance things. And, you know, and a few things to really confirm, you know, really before moving forward, if you're changing your banking relationship or even with your current bank, you want to make sure the bank has direct deposit capability, which is typically standard, online bill pay, ATM debit card functionality. I mean, that's typically what you see across the board. Typically, you're not going to see the checking account earn that much interest. The bigger factor that you really want to look at is avoiding unnecessary fees. And, you know, a lot of times you'll have to set up an account with a specific minimum in order to benefit from not paying the fees. You want to make sure if that's realistic to keep long term. And if they say, well, you need to keep $10,000 or $25,000 in this account, are you going to be able to keep that in there over the long run? Because if you can't, you know, anything you're saving on the front end is going to be eaten away on the back end by fees. And that's really the issue that I see from a checking perspective. On the savings account, it gets a little bit more gray. And really looking at the savings side, you know, really what you want to do with savings, and really if I look at the checking account, I would say you really want, you know, they always say how much, and we've talked about an emergency fund or rainy day fund before, you know, how much do you want to keep in a bank account that's liquid? Well, you know, typically you want to keep up to 6 months, but like everything else, it's not that simple. And really, you know, you really want to try to keep 1 to 2 months in your checking, your core account, you know, your operating account. Anything above that needs to go into a savings account where it can earn more interest. And, you know, a few things about a savings account really is you're really looking to use that account for your short-term savings goals, as well as potentially funding, you know, an emergency fund. The main thing you want to look at is to make sure, first, it's easy to use and link to your current bank account. It doesn't have to be at, you know, if you have an account at Wells Fargo or JP Morgan or Bank of America, it doesn't have to be there. You can link it to an online bank as an example, which, you know, we can talk about in a minute. But the benefit of that is you're typically going to earn more interest. You can journal money or move money over to that savings account, and you're going to benefit from what I would hope would be a higher interest rate. You also want to make sure you avoid any sort of junk fees from moving the funds. So you want to be clear when you set up the savings account, what you're going to earn on it, what the term is, make sure that, you know, you don't have to keep the money in there for a certain amount of time and get whipsawed where, you know, you journal money back, and they're charging you, you know, $5 to $20 every time you do it. You really want to avoid that. And, you know, the obvious question, you know, with a savings account really, you know, it doesn't have check writing functionality or anything like that. Typically, it's going to be where you put the money, where you can get some more interest, and it's set aside where it's not in your main account where you might spend it. You know, it's there
for not as easy to get to. It's not as easy to spend.
Exactly. And really, that gets into what a money market account. Really, the difference between a savings and money market account typically is a money market account typically is going to offer check writing privileges, as well as some cases having a debit card. So it's kind of like a checking account, but earns a little bit more interest. The only thing about that is it's like trade-offs with everything. There's probably going to be some fees associated with the check writing, as well as the debit card, ATM card to have linked to the money. Mm. The question would be, well, you know, if you have your account at Wells Fargo, shouldn't I just open an account? Or I'm not even saying, you know, Chase, Bank of America. Well, you know, realistically speaking, you know, if you can look at what they're paying on the checking, typically, you know, you're not going to get really any sort of real good deal from them. Not to say that you can't. It depends what kind of relationship you have. But one of the things you could do is go out, you know, if you have a surplus of cash that you want to keep and readily available and liquid, you could go to a couple websites, and this is usually what I suggest. And one is bankrate.com, another's nerdwallet.com, and then a third is deposits.com. The purpose of these websites are you can go out and look at various money market savings account rates, and you can find one that really looks to meet your needs. And, you know, the purpose of it is really to try to get more money on money that's sitting there potentially for a future use or an emergency, you know, because every little bit that you can get on that money will add up over time, you know, versus just giving the money, just giving the money to the bank and not getting any interest back in return.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard deposits.com. I know Bankrate, I know NerdWallet. I did not realize there was a deposits.com as well.
Yeah, it's amazing how websites will pop up, you know. And again, really what you want to do is, I mean, with most of them, you can put it the city zip code in. Really what you want to look at to see is what the rate is, if there's any special catches, you know, like if you, the worst thing you can do is put money in something and need it for an emergency and realize you can't get it out because it's locked up for a certain amount of time.
Well, I don't usually think of, when you talk about money market accounts, I don't usually think of that money being locked up, as it were. And I think that that's the big difference between, say, a money market account and a CD, right?
Yeah, so that really gets into what a CD is. You know, it's a certificate of deposit, and typically it allows you to deposit money into an account, and it's for a specific period of time. You know, typically you're going to see a CDs between 6 months and 5 years. You know, and the CD typically will pay more interest than other deposit accounts. And really the trade-off there would be, you know, in order to get typically a higher rate would be a lack of liquidity. And so what ends up happening is if you have to get the money before the maturity date, you know, typically you're going to pay an interest penalty or there'll be some other charges involved. And a CD typically would be a good fit for someone that has a fixed expense coming up that they know when the specific date is or a general date, and they want to learn earn a little bit more interest, you know, while it's sitting there waiting for its end purpose.
Thanks so much for listening to Between Life and Money, Finding Balance. We hope you're enjoying it so far. If you have any questions or would like to talk more about this topic, you can find us at www.balancewealthpartners.com and through all our social media platforms that are listed in the show notes.
This gets me to the question of how much money should I keep in a bank? I mean, because, you know, it's hard to try to figure out, okay, I've got investments, you know, stocks and bonds, and I've got banks, and and I realize some banks offer both services, but, you know, how do you sort of look at the balance of your money and figure where what should be?
And you know, I would say it's something that, just like whether it's your investments, with a lot of things, you want to really review on an ongoing basis to make sure you're getting the most out of them. You know, the most use for what you're paying or getting as it relates to interest. And that's the same case with the banks and credit unions. You know, I look at it at the same time and say, you know, if you have a surplus, it's easy to sit there and just kind of forget about it, have the money get direct deposited into Wells Fargo or Chase or Bank of America account. And you start to realize, you know, well, if you have $50,000 in there and you could get, you know, 3%, you know, that's $1,500 versus if they're paying you 0.01, you know, where you're getting probably $50. And, you know, just by earning that little bit more, you could think, well, if I had that money, you know, could I pay down some debt? Could I save for retirement? There's a lot of things you can do with it. And so I really look at it and say it's important every 3 to 6 months to say, well, how much do I have in my checking account? If it's more than 1 to 2 months of your expenses, you need to push it over to your savings account. Typically, your savings account, your savings plus checking should have up to about 6 months of expenses. Once you get above 6 months of expenses, you really want to look at other things, whether it's, you know, I would use the example of, you know, whether you have outstanding debt that you may want to pay down with that excess, or whether, you know, you're not fully taking advantage of potentially a match that you might have through your employer, and you want to more than likely increase your contribution as using or utilizing that difference in the surplus. I always tell people the situation could change. You know, if you have a child or family, your family circumstances change. You may have to put more away, less. You know, it really, really depends. But what you don't want to do is just give the bank your money and leave it sitting there not earning anything.
Yeah, no, I know. And it's easy. It's easy to do that, actually. It really is, isn't it?
It is. And it's sometimes an afterthought. And that really gets into kind of a few final points. It's easy to set up account. It can be easy to set up accounts online and forget about, you know, other accounts that you have elsewhere, whether they're investment or bank accounts. You know, really, I always say people kind of collect some of these things like antiques or collectibles. They just add up over time and you have money here, there, and everywhere. Yeah. You really don't want to do that because it really creates a lot of problems over the long run. And, you know, that you always want to make sure if you're opening one account other than for a specific reason, you close out the old account and you want to make sure it's closed. Because if you have the legacy accounts, you know, it can create, as I mentioned, unnecessary surprises. And the funds in some cases aren't even, you know, not accounted for. And typically, if it, you know, eventually it's going to start dropping below a minimum and you're going to start getting fees that you really don't see every month. And it's just going to eat away at any money there when in the end, you know, that money could have been better utilized for other uses. The second point really is you really want to utilize independent websites to try to make sure that you're getting the best deal from the financial institution that you're using. And kind of, as I mentioned, there's always trade-offs because you could say, well, I'm not getting enough interest. But at the same time, if you have a personal relationship and you have business accounts and you're trying to get things done and you have someone that can help you with that, a personal banker, you know, there's still a lot of value in that. And it's really, it goes down to the individual relationship and the family's relationship and what they're trying to, you know, accomplish. Yeah. And, you know, that is the main thing with a lot of things in life. You know, you want to look at your specific individual or family circumstances, you know, and make the best decision for your circumstances. Also, at kind of like I mentioned, the final thing that I would mention, you just always want to review these accounts annually. You know, you want to make sure, just like with your emergency fund, rainy day fund, you have enough in there. You also want to make sure if you have a change in your family situation, like a child, you want to make sure that you put more money away because they're definitely going to take more money. You're going to have to use more money for them.
Yeah. You know, as we get ready to wrap this all up, though, there's one last question that occurs to me, and you kind of alluded to it a couple of times. Is it valuable, worthwhile, useful to concentrate maybe a lot of your savings and your accounts in a bank, in like one bank, because that gives you a relationship with that bank and the people there?
I really think you have to weigh that. And, you know, it's like a lot of things these days with people that work at banks. You know, the banks get bought, they change names, yeah, and the employees often leave. And so really, you want to try to have a relationship. You want to review the relationship on an ongoing basis. But at the same time, you know, if you can earn more interest, if it's, you know, if it's a sizable amount of interest, you have to weigh that real difference or change. And really, you know, it's good to have someone. And what I try to do with clients is I try to help them. Even if I can't do the banking, I can try to help point them in right directions, like a lot of things. And it's, you know, I consider myself kind of like a quarterback where I try to help. I may not have all the solutions or the answers, but I know people that do.
Oh, good. Good. So people should look to you or whoever their financial advisor is if they've got questions like this and have this simple conversation, right?
Exactly. Because, you know, a lot of people, if they're in the financial industry, they focus on specifically the investments or the form, whatever they're managing specifically. Yeah. You know, it's important to have a holistic approach where you can share your information to make sure that, you know, you're putting enough money away for your specific circumstance. Mm-hmm. Or at the same time, making sure you're even getting enough in interest or the bank's paying you what we would consider would be fair interest.
Very good. Well, Jeff, as always, it's an interesting and useful conversation. Appreciate it. Sure. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
You know, and listeners, if you're listening to this, first, thanks for listening. But second, if you're not a subscriber already, this part is easy. You just have to hit subscribe. You don't have to ask advice from anybody. You hit subscribe, and then you're automatically notified whenever Jeff issues a new episode of his podcast, Between Life and Money. If you like it, tell people about, spread the word about what Jeff is talking about and the kind of conversations he's having here on a regular routine basis. I'm Bill Tucker, and on behalf of Jeff and everybody at Balanced Wealth Partners, thank you for listening today. And I remind you that you can go out today and make today a great day or not. It is your choice. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Between Life and Money, Finding Balance. Visit our website at balancewealthpartners.com. And don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. Content here is for illustrative purposes and general information only. It is not legal, tax, or individualized financial advice, nor is it a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold any specific security or engage in any specific trading strategy. Results will vary. Past performance is no indication of future results or success. Market conditions change continuously. This commentary reflects the personal opinions, viewpoints, and analyses of Jeffrey Panik. It does not necessarily represent those of RFG Advisory, private client services, their clients, or their employees. This commentary should not be regarded as a description of advisory services provided by RFG Advisory or performance returns of any client. The views reflected in the commentary are subject to change at any time without notice. Securities offered by registered representatives of private client services, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered by investment advisory representatives of RFG Advisory, a registered investment advisor. Private client services, Balanced Wealth Partners, and RFG Advisory are unaffiliated entities. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where RFG Advisory and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. No advisory services may be rendered by RFG Advisory unless a client agreement is in place.